Yes? How many of you are enjoying Flash Memory Summit? Good. How many of you are here at Flash Memory Summit for the first time? Great. Awesome. Living up to your expectations?
So far, so good.
So far, so good? All right, there's still two more days.
Two more days to go,
so we'll find out. We'll check in at the end of that. How many are here for the second to their fifth time? Wait, how many have there been? Six, right?
11.
Oh, 11? Has anybody been here since the beginning? 11 times? Wow! That's great. So you've seen some big evolution. Well, if you're in the field, you've seen some big evolution. One thing I enjoy about doing what I do to support this event is learning so much about technology because, I hate to break it to you, you'll probably be shocked, but I am not in the technical field. I love everything about it, but can't wrap my head around some of it, so I appreciate all of those of you that can. What I do well, and what I enjoy doing, is helping people to articulate and present their information in a way that makes the audience members grasp it and retain it, and also, hopefully, enjoy it a little bit. So that's what this time we have together is going to be about sharing some of what I know and just some snippets that will help you incorporate that into a presentation and make it more effective. Does that sound like what you signed up for, what you read about?
Mm-hmm.
Yes? All right. So I want to ask you a question. How many of you, when you were kids, wanted to have a superpower? Anybody? What was that? What did you want?
I think it's probably the vision thing. X-ray vision.
X-ray vision. That's a good one. That's a good one. What else? Yeah.
I am originally from India, and the only religion there is cricket, the game of cricket.
Oh, you want to be like
cricket player.
The master cricket player.
Yeah.
Those of you who just walked in, you're like, what? Superpowers? I thought I was going to a presentation skills thing, but I'm going to get there, I promise. What else? Superpower. What superpowers do you want? What superpowers do you want?
Speed.
He found it. He's in the right industry. Flash. Great, someone else. Superpower, what do you want? Those are any bad, you can't hide from any bad.
He'll fly,
that's mine. Oops, he's gonna work his way back here. That's mine. There it is. Well, I wanted to fly when I was a kid. I still do. You could fly, especially if you live in, how many of you live in Silicon Valley? Wow, so the rest of you travel to be here, that's great. So if I could fly today, I would not have to spend endless hours in traffic. That's now why I'm practical. Flying is what I wanted. So why do I ask you about this in presentation skills, lunch and learn? What the heck is this part I have to do with presenting?
Well, engagement. Three.
Well, a lot of people feel like you have to have a superpower to be a good speaker. Like there's something that if you don't have it, you're not going to be it. But the good news is you don't have to have a superpower to be a super speaker. And today that's what I'm going to share with you. I'm going to share some things, again, that you can do that will help you wherever you are to become a good speaker, better speaker. Some of you are probably great already, so some of these might just help a little bit. All right, before we get started, I'm going to do a quick activity, and I know that there's at least one person here from last year. I did this activity last year, so if you know the answer, please don't share it. But I'm going to put a sentence up on the screen, and I want you to count the number of times you see the letter F here in the sentence, okay? The letter F. That's all you do. Just count the number of the letter F, okay? Go. Right? How many of you found three and only three F's? Raise your hand. Hi. Great. How many of you found four and only four? Anybody? Anybody find five?
Yeah.
Yeah, a couple. Anybody find six? Yeah? One? You find seven? Well, there aren't seven. Someone argued with me once that there were seven. In fact, there are six. You're going, oh my gosh. What small little word might you have just skimmed right on over? This word right here, right? So stupid. Yeah, maybe. No, I don't. No, I do it because really, speaking effectiveness is about small things that you do. The of is a very small word, but it matters to that sentence. So what we're going to do in the next 45 minutes or so, I'll go over some small things.
There are also 14 E's which contain an F.
Wait,
you look at the key up there, every one of those keys also
contains a test. Are you an engineer? Guilty. No one's ever said that before. That's fantastic. I love that. Very good. I'm not surprised very often by this activity, and I would never use that. So, some of the things that get in the way of a good presentation. There are many of them. I call them let's keep with the superhero thing. Villains. What are some villains or things that get in the way of a good presentation that you've seen or experienced? What gets in the way?
Your
fear, our anxiety, and we're going to spend a few minutes talking about anxiety for sure. How many of you feel on a scale of 1 to 10 where 1 is no anxiety at all? 10 is petrified to get up. How many of you feel some level on that spectrum of 1 to 10 of anxiety when you speak? The rest of you don't have any nerves at all? Or you're just not pointing for it? So I do a lot of coaching, and I'll get to who I am in just a second. I do a lot of coaching speakers from executive CEO level to sales team, people who've had lots of experience, people who've had little experience. And I have to say, the only time I worry about a speaker is when he or she says, I got this. Why would I worry about that person? Because they might not be prepared? Why else? So, I'm going to give you a quick analogy. This weekend I played tennis, and I played in a district championship with one of my teams. And the first day, we did really well. And we won 4 of our matches, lost 1 of our matches. Second day, we played the number one team. Thankfully, I did well. I was very happy. I always feel nervous before I play a match. My legs would get tight. It took me 2 or 3 games to loosen up. So one of our teams, our double teams, who are great players, they were like, we weren't nervous at all. At the beginning, they're like, we're not nervous at all. Well, they lost. They lost because they weren't invested enough. They got a little cocky. They felt like I didn't need it that much. So it's the same way with speakers. Nerves show you care. They show you have something invested, and we all get nervous. I'll come back to that in a minute. So let me introduce myself before I forget. I almost did. So I'm Karen Williams. I'm a lead coach at Gold Echo Communications. I also do my own private practice, and just to keep myself busy and things interesting, I teach communication classes at San Jose State part-time. So I work with a lot of presenters, like I said, from student level to CEO level. I've seen the good, the bad, and the extremely boring presentations. And my purpose is to eliminate boring presentations from the planet. So that's why I'm here doing this today. So thank you for being here. So let's take a look now at a couple of the things that really get in the way, these villains, to presenting well. The first thing, and this is something that I know, I didn't even put it up. Sorry, I thought I put that up. That's my villain, the presenting. That's what I was talking about. You're like, what are you talking about, villain? So, what happens when those things get in the way? What happens to your audience? They lose interest. How many of you have been this audience member? Yeah? Well, and maybe you're not falling asleep, but what are you doing or what are audience members doing if they're not interested? They're checking their phones. The cell phone is your biggest competition in the room. The cell phone is your biggest competition in the room. So if you can't engage and capture the audience, they're going to be on their phone, they're going to be multitasking. Everybody's busy these days. All right. So I want to go over 2 things that are the real big areas that get in the way of a good presentation. The first one, and again, this you all know this, data overload. Your industry, right, it's all about data. It's all about massive information that we have and how to access it. We have so much information, and as a presenter, you have so much information and you want to share it, and you want to share all of it, and the audience can't take in all of it. Some of you may have, I'm going to show you a slide in a minute. Some of you may have seen this. You remember back in the Afghanistan-Afghani War, there was a particular slide that made the rounds, and I still use it today because it's such a great example, and I see this kind of slide all the time. So there was a meeting about military strategy in Afghanistan. This was the first slide that went up. Have you guys seen this slide? Yeah, it's made the rounds. If you haven't seen it, this is a real slide. So the general at the time was General McChrystal. And his comment, he joked, but it was only a half joke. He said, once we figured out this slide, we will have won the war. And I feel like this is true. How many of you, and I'm not going to ask about this conference, because I'm sure you haven't, but in your experiences, how many of you have seen slides that are like a mess like this? So what happens when this slide is up there? Or something like it. What happens here? What is your audience doing? Yeah, they're nodding off. How many of you, when you see something like this, so imagine this is something that's more, you know, in your area. Someone will put up a slide, and I know you've seen it, with all this data, numbers, text. How many of you check out and like, I'm not going there? Yeah, so usually half the room will say yes. You see it, you're like, oh God, here we go. It's going to be one of those presentations. And you check out. You just the brain cannot take in information in this way. The other kind of slides we see all the time are the ones that have the sentences that the speaker is saying verbatim. Have you seen those? Yeah, and those are real fun, because it's really fun to be read, you know, read to. Well, the thing about that is, according to cognitive load theory, the human brain cannot assimilate verbally the same words that you're taking in visually. So if you've got words up there that you're speaking, you're already not supporting your audience to retain it. So it's better to use images and phrases, key words, rather than full sentences. If you're showing a graphic, really think about what is the key takeaway from this graph. If you're showing a trend, show the main trend in a line and not all the supporting bullet points. I'm not going to go into too much about that. We do whole workshops on how to do slides. Believe me, people need them. But just when you think about your slides, think about what is the key takeaway for my audience as a result of this slide. How is this slide benefiting them? Something like this does not, because they're too confused and they can't find out where to go. So your job as a presenter is to make it easy for your audience with your visuals and your data. So make it relate. Okay. What I really want to focus on more in this session, because it's much more conducive to the time we have, is to look at how you can, I know none of you are this, stop being a boring presenter. What makes a presenter boring? Anybody?
The audience gets bored, so it's just participating. People are on their phones, responding to emails.
Yeah, so you know that they're bored when they're on their phones, responding to emails, doing all of that, right? So what does the speaker do that encourages the audience to respond to emails rather than pay attention? Yeah, recite the info on the slide. And particularly, I like this one. When the speaker, I'm going to have to demonstrate because this is how it usually goes. I like this one. The speaker is here and they're going, stop being a boring presenter, blah, 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 blah. Right? They're here and they're just reading off the slide. Or they could be just reading off their laptop. So yeah, reading off the slide. As soon as the presenter does this, they're giving you full permission to pull out your cell phone. If you turn your back on your audience, you're giving full permission to pull out a cell phone. Okay, so that's reading from the slides is boring. What else makes the presentation boring?
Talking with a monitor.
Speaking with a monotone voice, which is when you never change it ever, it's always the same, right? It loves to see. I used to have a professor, I went to Santa Clara University, and I had a professor that was, I loved going to the class. All he did was lecture, which immediately for me now would be like a nightmare, right? All he did was lecture. But his voice was sort of pitched and monotone, but it was so soothing, and all I did is I didn't even open my notebook, I just sat there and like zoned out and went to La La Land. So he just put me in this great thing, and then I go back out and I don't know what we covered in that class. So I'll read the notes, because that's all he did was really read the notes for us. So you need to have some range in your voice. Does anybody have a problem with or suffer a little bit from being monotone or want to expand the range? Does anybody feel like that? Okay, so I'm going to give you a tip. This is one of your tips, your take-home tips today. If you're monotone, or if you know somebody else who's monotone, I want you just take an open anything. Somebody pull out one of your pieces of paper from your packet for me. Pull out a piece of paper. Here's one. He was fast. Okay. So, oh, but that's just modern. My glasses on. Okay, I can read this. Yeah, okay. It's being an angel over here. So this is what you do. You take it and you read it like it's the most amazing, fascinating, dramatic thing ever. And you don't do this in front of your audience. You do this in your practice, and I swear it works. So, if I had a monotone voice and I want to work on my range, I'm going to practice in the privacy of my office or home or somewhere else where I'm not going to be embarrassed, where the people are looking, I'm going to say, lunch and learn at Flash Memory Summit. Pick up your lunch and join us on Tuesday night from 12:30 to whatever. The point is, get extreme, and what happens is, you push your edges of your range. Then when you come back to speaking, you're a little more going beyond that monotone. Now again, this really works. Some of you are thinking, oh, yeah, I'm doing that. Funny thing in front of us all. But the truth is, I've worked with, like I said, I've coached many people, and one gal I was working with, and she had a real problem with this. And she thought, she was in a workshop, we run a workshop for 12 people at a time. She thought I was just doing it to have some fun activity in the workshop. I actually had to stand up and practice with your partner, but unfortunately for you, we don't have time to do that today. So the next day, she had to present in a meeting. I got an email that afternoon, and she said, okay, Karen, I have to say, I thought you were just filling time in your workshop with that activity, the reading, crazy reading. I did it for 2 minutes before I went into my presentation, and I got three different people come up to me after and say what a difference. It makes a difference. It really does. So, for those of you who have monotone voices at all, practice that. Do a little bit each day. Read the newspaper, read your news feed, whatever it is, and then when you go to present, you'll be a little bit more dynamic. Okay, so there's the monotone voice. What else contributes to a boring speaker?
Too much text, no visuals or graphics or pictures.
Yeah, so the visuals are really important. You want the visuals to enhance what you're doing and not take away. So too much text. I'll tell you right now, text is not your friend when it comes to visuals. Eliminate as much text as you can. If you have a full sentence on there, it should be a quote. If it's not a direct quote, you should never have a full sentence on a slide. Keywords. Again, the slides are going to help the audience stay engaged with you and remember not to put them off your presentation. Okay, what else? So we got monotone. What else can make you speak boring? Yeah?
Being stiff, so lack of gestures, hand motions.
Yeah. So when you stand in one position and stay there the whole time, you're not very animated, you're not very expressive, not very dynamic. One of the reasons I don't stand behind a podium is because I think that's a big block, first of all, to you and the audience connecting. We're going to talk about connecting with the audience in a moment. But also, it keeps you in a box. So people feel like they can't express. You can't move around. So you want to have energy in your presentation as well. You don't want to just stand in one place. Sometimes you have to because it's the way it's set up. So if any of you are presenting and you're in one of these panels and you're standing behind a podium, you can still use your hands. You can still make facial expressions. You know, let your passion for what you're sharing come through in your facial expressions and the tone of your voice. All of that helps prevent boring speakers. What else? What else gets in the way? Yeah, this is really, what's your name?
Juan.
So Juan just said complicated concepts. How many of you have presented or have been in a presentation where there's very complex concepts being presented? Well, a lot of that here is complex, right? The technology is complex. So it's the job of the speaker, particularly if you're speaking to an audience that's not in your industry,
to relate that complex information to something familiar. Something familiar. Using analogies is a really great way to connect your audience. I'm going to get to that in a moment. One of the things that's really important to do is to demonstrate that you're a competent speaker. So I'm going to go through a few things like that. And if you incorporate what we talked about no data overload and not being boring by incorporating some of these, then you won't have this, which we see a lot, and hopefully you'll get to this. I like to joke that this woman is so happy because she's probably just finished a whole thing of Coke or something caffeinated right there. But that's the bottom line. You want your audience to be engaged. So first thing, back to the data, is tell a well-structured story. A lot of times what we see when I work, someone will call me to help them with the presentation, and they'll say, will you take a look at my deck and tell me what you think? What's wrong with that? No story. A deck is just a slide after slide after slide after slide. I don't know the intention. I don't know who the audience is. I don't know what the goal of the presentation is. I don't know what the overall story is. You need to tell an overall story. In fact, I was just working with someone this morning, and she's pitching tomorrow night to a big angel investor event in San Francisco. So we were, who's the audience? What's important to them? What's the information? What's your story? So she's delivering her pitch in a basic problem, solution, benefit kind of structure, but it's still a structure. It helps you tell the story, helps the audience follow. And if you get lost, you know you can always go back to your structure and start, here's the problem, here's the opportunity, here's how our company is solving it, and here are the benefits for you for partnering with us, whatever it happens to be. So, I'm not going to go too much in that. We do whole day workshops on structuring stories, but structure stories, you have a presentation coming up. Take a step back from the deck that you've been using and using. I know none of you do that, but take a step back from that deck and think about what is the story you're telling? What is the goal? What do you want the audience to do after the presentation? Then work out how you're going to tell that story and then bring your slides. We did a whole workshop with them and the steps of developing a presentation. The last thing you do is bring in slides. People usually start by opening their laptop, pulling up some slides, putting it together. There's my presentation. That's the last thing you do. Okay, so we've talked about that. Now, let's talk about confident delivery. I asked you earlier about anxiety levels. Some of you raised your hand, some of you didn't. But my whole point is everybody has some anxiety. It's good because that energy helps you to be more dynamic. The key is to channel, so we're going to talk about that in a moment. But how many of you feel, just on a confidence, we looked at anxiety, but how many of you feel on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being completely not confident, how many of you feel between, say, 1 and 5 being so-so confident? How many of you are somewhere between not confident to so-so confident? Yeah? Okay. How many of you feel like from so-so confident to, yes, I'm pretty confident. I got this. I'm pretty confident. Good. So for the people that feel the first area, why? What are some things that contribute to your level of confidence? Who raised your hand on the first round, 1 to 5?
Your speaking body.
So what contributes to that? It's just there. It's just that there are people in front of you. Okay? What else? What else contributes to your confidence or not super confident?
Preparation.
Maybe you didn't have time to prepare, and you've got to do this thing, but you're not as confident as you could be. How about the people from the 5 to 10? What makes you feel that way? In the back, I saw you raise your hand. Why do you feel 5 to 10? What contributes to that feeling for you?
Well, we have preparation, definitely.
Yeah, definitely preparation. Experience. The more you do it, the easier it gets, right? So that's your experience. Practice. So there are some really, really simple things to do, and practicing is one of them. Really, you know, again, I've worked with a lot of people, and I do still teach college, and I was a college student, and I carried some of the bad habits, like procrastination. I mean, how many of you stayed up all night writing a paper the night before was due? Right? We still, those habits stay with us in our careers. So if there's a report due tomorrow, or a presentation due tomorrow, sometimes it doesn't get done until the night before. But let's take a moment and look at
anxiety. So managing anxiety is really important. And one thing that we've learned through all my work and through research is that anxiety has three basic sources when you're presenting. So the first source is the situation. So what does that mean? How is the situation going to affect your anxiety? Right. It's not normal to see 100 people staring back at you. This conference, this summit, is a particular situation in which you might be speaking. How many of you are presenting in this or have presented in a conference like this? Yeah, so it's very different to see rows of folks than it is maybe around a board table. What other types of situations do people present? Have you presented it in this room, anybody?
A board or something like
yeah,
that.
To a board.
Yeah.
Where else?
Wedding.
Wedding. Yes, definitely a situation, a celebratory event.
There's one that I find it's very easy, which is like online
or
web.
Oh, WebEx is?
You just do up to your computer, there's lots of people up there, but it's completely isn't.
Yes.
I find it very easy.
You find it easy? Okay, good. So that's good though, but so, yes.
What about when your mic goes out, or your presentation dies, the light bulb goes off?
It is situational, right? So, for example, today's presentation is Lunch and Learn. This is a situation. Now, in order to help minimize anxiety around the situation, you want to know as much as you can about the place. So, I've actually been in this very room before, so I know this room. When I coach people, I tell them or I take them into this space. Stand in the place where you're going to be presenting and look. Because it's human nature to figure out all our exits. So I'm going to familiarize myself. The first time I stood up here was right before all of you. I'm going to just notice the exit. I'm going to notice where things are before I actually get here. So take all that unfamiliarness away by going into the space ahead of time. I know that this situation is a conference. I know that people are going to be here during lunch. I know you're going to be eating lunch. That changes things a little bit. So know as much as you can about the situation. I also have backup. I had a flash drive for my presentation. I had it on my computer. I brought my own adapter in case there wasn't one here. I brought all of those things. I also know my presentation enough that I don't need the slides. Now, my presentation is different than a lot of yours because the slides are just helping you remember and remind you what I'm doing, so I can do the presentation without slides. You need to have a backup plan. So like you said, if a light bulb goes out, you can still do the presentation. It's a different presentation without slides, but you can still do the presentation. Sometimes microphones don't work. I'm not using one. I'm having to project my voice because we've got people all the way in the back of the room. So you might need to be in the space and see, can you do it? If we were in the huge keynote hall, there's no way I could effectively present without a mic, right? So that's the tech side we don't have control over. So what I'm really talking about are some things you do have control over, but certainly have backup so that you can take care of those kind of situations. All right, what else? Anything else you can do to take care of situation-based anxiety? Yes, absolutely. If you can't get to the site, conference centers are very similar, right? So you can go online and look at the site you're going to be speaking at. And when you practice, or when you're sitting, visualize yourself in the space. Again, it's about removing what's unfamiliar, so you're not familiarizing yourself with the space, you're connecting with the audience instead. So visualization and studies show the power of how we think tangibly affects our experience. So if we think about standing in this situation, and see yourself presenting confidently, then chances are you'll be more likely to do that. I already told you I play tennis. If I miss the first serve, and between the first and second serve, I think, don't double fault, don't double fault, chances are pretty high that I'm going to double fault. If instead,
I see myself tossing the ball just right, and I did this over the weekend. And I, when I would look at the thing, I would see the ball exactly where I wanted it to go. I didn't stress about don't double ball, because then I would have been tired, I would have double ball. So when people are thinking, gosh, I don't want to blow this presentation, gosh, I don't want to blow this presentation, that's what you're putting in your mind. So rather than that, see yourself giving a great presentation. See people in the audience smiling and nodding and engaging. Which brings me to the next source of our anxiety when presenting. It's audience-based. Who is in the room? So tell me, when you're feeling a little more nervous, who's in the room? What type of audience causes a little more anxiety?
When there's work, safe.
When there's work? Okay, hold that thought. Hold that thought for a little while.
Knowledge level.
Okay, how many of you feel a little more nervous when you're speaking to peers? Experts in the field, in your field. Yeah, because you can't kind of get to a group, right? They know. They're going to call you on it. So people I work with, a lot of them feel a little more nervous when they're speaking to peers. Yeah.
I'm just a really
deaf.
I'm more nervous when I don't know the background of my audience. I don't know where to raise.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
So this is a great point.
What's your name? Veronica.
Veronica just made it. I know you can't hear her back there. Veronica just made the point about she's more nervous when she doesn't know the audience's level of understanding. So is she going to come in and bore them with too basic information? Or is she going to come in too high tech and they'll be lost? So how do you take care of that problem? You can do a survey. You can ask them questions in the beginning to gauge the level of expertise.
So regardless of the level of knowledge or whatever the people there, the fact that I'm being invited to present something just tells me that I have something different that they may not know.
Yes.
In that case, I have to trust on my information I'm presenting, my title figures.
Yes.
They are conveying so that it makes a meaningful time spent for them here.
Yes. Absolutely. Now, this is great. Your name again is
Yash.
Yash. He just said again, you have to value the reason you're invited to speak because you have something to contribute. Right? So you wouldn't be standing up there if you didn't have something to contribute. So when you look at it that way and think about that, you're helping your audience because you're giving them information. Again, this goes back, I can't cover everything that I cover the whole day, but you want to have a clear intention for them. You want to do it, again, just like the situation, you want to know as much as you can about who's in the room so that, like Veronica said, you can tailor your information to their level of knowledge. Now, how many of you have audiences sometimes that have people with very basic knowledge to expert knowledge? Okay, so the way you get around that is you say, so I know a lot of you have some great information and are great public speakers, so I want you to bear with me just a little bit while I cover some basics for those in the room that don't. Because that tells those people that have the expertise, you know they know what you're saying, you're not talking down to them, you're going to come back up, but you're bringing everybody on the same page first. So again, that way you're taking care of the audience. Because they're the most important people in the room. They're the most important people in the room. If they weren't in the room, you wouldn't be speaking. So what is it you're giving them? Always remember that and figure out who they are. So go, if you don't, some people say, I don't know. Well, you can go onto LinkedIn and figure out who some people are who might be in the room. Figure out what they need and try to address that. Okay, and finally, Juan, you were alluding to this before. The goal. What is the goal? So the higher the stakes, generally, the higher the level of anxiety. So I'm working with some startup folks. They're pitching. They need some money. They need some cash. So the stakes are pretty high. They're trying to stay afloat. So the stakes are high. Some people I work with, they use their managers. They do all hands meetings. They're updating. Well, the stakes aren't quite so high. So again, the more you know, the better you'll be able to meet the needs of who's in the room, no matter what this goal is. But you need to know what the goal is. A lot of times people don't. All right, so does anybody have questions about the sources of anxiety and how to handle the sources? Okay, so it really boils down to familiarity. Get to know as much as you can.
Question for you about anxiety.
What's your name?
Siva.
So, it would have probably even created more anxiety if I said, Stephen, tell me.
So,
just trying to help you move through that anxiety. Yeah.
So how do you
Okay, great. So thank you for another great segue. So now I want to talk about a few tips on how to deal with anxiety. So when the stakes are high, does anybody have anything that they do that helps with anxiety? Give me an example of high stakes for you.
Talking to somebody
Oh, he said talking somebody into resigning. That's a very unique situation. Yeah. So basically, when you're trying to get somebody to agree with something that wouldn't be their first choice, that's a high stake. Yes, sir.
Other than drink some water or coffee.
Drink some water or coffee. Okay. Yeah. Imagine the worst case scenario. Yeah.
I think about my dog.
Think about your dog.
Yeah. I mean, just kind of bring a smile to my face and lighten the mood a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's talk for a moment. Feel free to come on in and have a seat. Those of you who are just... There's plenty of space if you'd like to. So, a couple of things. There are ways to manage anxiety. I'm going to give you a few tips and techniques. This question was very specific about the goal. So when you're approaching something like that, you really want to look at what does this person need in order to make this decision. They need a good argument, a good reason, sounds like. And keeping in mind, again, that the overall good that's coming out of the goal. I mean, those kind of are more interpersonal uncomfort situations, so that's a little different, but yeah. So I'm going to give you a couple of tips and tricks as far as presenting. First thing I want to talk about is body language. Because your body language is really important. So the suit is horrible, but I'm using this image because the posture. She's in what's called a power pose, standing like this. This is not a way you would stand in front of your audience. This is something to do to help you feel confident. Has anybody ever watched a TED Talk by a woman named Amy Cuddy? Yes. And her research is all about how the physical body posturing contributes to your true sense of confidence. So, I'm in the communications profession. We know that how I hold my body communicates externally to you. So if I'm talking to you like this, and if this is kind of how I'm standing, what am I communicating? I'm shy, anxious, I'm closed, right, holding myself tight. Whereas if I'm standing like this talking to you, what am I communicating to you? Openness, confidence, connecting, I'm looking you in the eye. So it communicates externally, we know that. So if you simply stand up straight with open gestures facing people, you're already communicating to them that you're confident. Amy Cuddy's research was fascinating because she had people hold these poses, like this picture, like this. This is a power pose, or this is a power pose. This is actually the biggest a human being can be, this big X. Again, you don't do this in front of people unless you have a baby. You do this at home, in your office, or in a bathroom stall before you present. But if you hold this pose, or even if you're at your desk and you put your feet up on the desk and your hands behind your head, like that's an executive power pose, if you hold it for 2 minutes, something amazing happens. Your body chemistry actually changes. So instead of producing cortisol, which is a hormone causing what?
Stress.
Instead of producing cortisol because I'm standing in front of a threat of 100 people, my body starts to produce testosterone, which is responsible for that, I got this, right? No. There we are. So, it's been proven, and different people have researchers have done this. She has a new book out called Presence, and it talks a lot about it. But if you feel anxiety, if you have a significant, important goal presentation coming up, again, 2 minutes every day, stand like this. Just stand like this for 2 minutes. You got to do it 2 minutes, because that's kind of the threshold where the body chemistry starts to change. So do this every day for a week leading up to your presentation. You're going to start feeling more confident. And the interesting thing is, you know, we all say fake it till you make it. So if I'm feeling really nervous, well, I'm going to fake it. I'm going to just stand tall and I'm going to look good. And at least I'm faking it. Pretty soon I'll feel it. But this is you really become it. You won't be faking it anymore. You actually start to experience that. So those of you who have any kind of nerves, try that out. What I'd
you do besides preparation to help with anxiety before I move on?
Breathing.
Breathing is so important. Breathing is so important. Duh, we have to breathe to live, right? But we forget. Why is breathing so much harder when you're nervous?
Your heart rate.
Your heart rate? What else happens? What happens to the physical body when you're nervous?
You perspire.
It contracts. Everything gets tight. You contract. So your lungs contract. So nervous speakers breathe like this. Just shallowly in the lungs. And so then you're running out of air and you have to breathe in more, and so it doesn't help your vocal production either. So breathing in deeply into your diaphragm is what will help you. And I'm going to give you a quick breathing technique. You can do it anywhere, anytime, and nobody will know because, flash, we all breathe. So everybody sit up tall in your chair. And this is breathing 101. This is the basic. What you're going to do is you're going to inhale for the same number of counts as you exhale. And you're just going to do a slight pause between the inhale and then a slight pause between the exhale. All right, so we'll do it together for two rounds. So everybody exhale first and then inhale for four. Ready? One, two, three, four. Pause. Exhale. One, two, three, four. Pause. Inhale. One, two, three, four. Pause. Exhale. One, two, three, four. Can you feel the difference? Just the two rounds, you feel a little calmer, a little more relaxed in your body? So when you're seated, waiting to go on, or up, or your neck, you know, a lot of people sit like this. So this is comfortable. This is also very closed. So my recommendation is to sit like this, open, and do your breathing like that. Nobody knows how you're doing your little tapping breathing. But you're keeping yourself open, which is telling yourself you're confident. And that breathing is helping you to stay relaxed. So that's another little trick. Okay, one more tip. Does anybody get sweaty palms or feel hot when they present, when the nerves come up? Anybody feel that? So the trick for that is to put a bottle of water in your refrigerator so it gets nice and cold. Then when you're presenting, all you have to do is hold it. Because the induction from your cold object, the palm of your hand, brings your body temperature down. Just like if you have a fever and you put a cold compress on your forehead, it's the same principle. Just hold it. Drinking water is good too, because you don't get dry mouth, so it tastes like the water. That gives you a chance to pause, collect your thoughts. Again, it's a little trick of the trade. Cold bottle, sometimes I put mine in the freezer. And you just hold on to it, brings your body temperature down. Unless you're in a room like this where it's so cold that your body temperature is already down, you don't need it. All right, anybody else have any tips? You talked about visualization, connect, getting familiar with the place. Anything else you do that helps your nerves?
Exercise.
The last thing I have is exercise. Take the stairs instead of the elevator if you're doing something. Park a little farther and walk. If you can do some exercise, do it. I used to carry around a little mini trampoline when I was working with execs, right before they go out for a keynote, and seriously, backstage, they'd be doing this. Because it really is just getting the energy out. I've done this kind of work for many years. I'm not going to tell you how many, but a lot. And I started teaching at the college level after I've been doing this for maybe 10 years. The first class that I taught, my first real college class, I was so nervous that I literally ran up and down the hallway a few times to just get the energy out. So exercising is great. Breathing, meditation, visualization, all of those things. Even if you're in your car for 5 minutes before you come into your presentation, it all helps. It really does. Last thing before we conclude today is this. Again, who's the most important person in the room or people?
Yep.
The audience. So many times speakers forget to connect to the audience. So we call them audience connecting techniques, and I'm going to give you a few of them. The first one is to engage the imagination. So oftentimes what happens in a presentation is a speaker thinks it's just him or her doing the talking. So it's a monologue instead of a dialogue. You can have a dialogue. without having the audience speak to you by doing things like engaging the imagination. You can say something like, remember last year we summer it when blah blah blah? The audience is then calling up mental images. Remember when we used to use floppy disks and stick them into the computers for storage? Who remembers that? You're engaging your imagination, you're thinking. So the audience is no longer passive. They're not speaking, but they're engaging with me mentally. So where in a presentation can you include language like, what if we could? Imagine if. Remember back to a time. Audience is thinking with you. Next one is invite participation. How do you invite participation in a presentation?
Thank
you. Ask questions. Ask questions. And a tip. If I want you to raise your hand, what have I been doing all this time? If I want you to raise your hand, what have I been doing? Raising my hand. Because if somebody says, how many of you feel like, you know, you're excited for the next presentation? People are often like, yeah, I don't know what to do. So if you want people to raise your hand, raise your hand. And they'll raise their hand. Sometimes you can have people stand up. I was working with a startup CEO last year. She was entered into the Startup Competition of the Year competition. I looked at who was going to be on the judging panel, and it was somebody who had just written a book about attention getters. So for her attention getter, she had people stand up. She said, stand up if you have kids. Stand up if you have an elder parent that needs care. Stand up if you're a parent. So everybody was standing up. She said, you're my target market. So it worked as far as inviting engagement. People were standing. You have to know who's in the room before you decide how you're going to invite participation. If it's executive level, you're not going to say, hey, raise your hand if you, you know, so you need to know who's in the room. But invite participation, ask questions. Finally, and this is the most important word that is least used in presentations, and that's the word you. What happens when a speaker says you? How many of you, or what about you, to an audience? What happens to every single person in the room? They pay attention because everybody's a you, right? If I said Jonathan, and that's just Jonathan right here. But when I say all of you, so how many of you are looking forward to the keynote this afternoon? And if I use that super there, I use it getting your attention with a question, and I use the word you. So where in a presentation that you're presenting can you say things like, I'm sure you'll see how this can be beneficial to you, right? You're using, you're helping them to see. Think about what this technology would do for your bottom line. So again, you're engaging the audience. You're helping them to use their mind to think about what you're trying to tell them and how it will be beneficial to them. All right, so again, this was a very short period of time, but I hope that you took a couple of things away at least, so that you can elevate your level of presentations. And again, you don't have to have a superpower. Just incorporate these small things. So I know some of you are getting ready to go to the next event. I'm here if you want to ask some questions. Enjoy the rest of your summit, and maybe we'll see you back here next year.